You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
And we're back. It's good to be back here. It's a real privilege and a pleasure to have on the guest line today Dr. Susan Shumsky. She's dedicated her life to helping people take command of their lives in highly effective, powerful, and positive ways. She's the best-selling author of 14 books, and she's with us today here to talk about the Beatles, to talk about the White Album, talk about her experiences in India. Dr. Shumsky, how are you today?
I am great. How are you doing today?
Well, doing very well. Good. Doing well. I meditated before coming on the air. I want you to know that.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, yeah. So, you spent a career in India, part of your career in India, and you got involved with the guru that the Beatles was. They were involved with the guru at the time of writing the songs for the White Album, and that's going to be re-released on November 22nd, and it's remixed, remastered, and better than ever, those songs, right?
Exactly, and it was released on November 9th. There is a box set, which includes not only the White Album, but also outtakes from the what they call Escher sessions, which took place at George Harrison's house where they were putting the album together. So it has a lot of those really unreleased kind of private sessions in it and other versions of various songs. So it's a very interesting box set that was released on November 9th.
Now, their guru, why did they, what was the fascination for them being in India and living there and getting the spirituality from their guru, the Maharishi?
Well, you know, it was the time. We were hippies. It was the 60s. We were flower children. We were anti-war. We were countercultural. And we were doing our best to experience higher states of consciousness, altered states. And our gurus at that time were people like Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who told us to turn on, tune in and drop out. And people like Bob Dylan, who were telling us, you know, to become basically counterculturalists. And the anti-war movement was going on. And we were all swept up in that. The Beatles were, I was. And we were seeking these experiences of higher states. And we thought we would get that through LSD, but that didn't really work out. It didn't work out for me. It didn't work out for the Beatles. So we were searching for something real, a real way to meditate. And Maharishi made that available to the population. So we learned transcendental meditation, which is what he founded.
Yes.
Exactly.
And for people that don't know what TM is, can you explain a little bit about it?
TM is a really simple practice of meditation. It uses a mantra. And in the practice, all you have to do is just repeat that mantra a little bit and then just allow it to kind of fade away or whatever it does. And then when you remember it, you come back to it. So it's a very simple technique. It doesn't require any concentration, any effort, any trying. And it doesn't really, it's not like you're trying to control your mind or trying to wipe your mind free of thought or anything like that. So there's no concentration or contemplation involved with it. It's not hypnosis. It's just a simple practice of using a mantra to go deep, deep, deep within into a state of what in India they call samadhi, the state of transcendental awareness, the state of absolute bliss consciousness. And it works. It works for just about anybody that tries it. It's actually, Maharishi used to always say, if you can think a thought, you can think the mantra. If you can think the mantra, you can meditate. So anyone who can think a thought can meditate.
Now, do you still use TM?
I personally do not practice TM. I stopped doing it in about 1989. I do another form of meditation that I teach, which I call divine revelation.
Ah.
So, no, I'm not practicing TM, but I do practice meditation. In fact, I was like you. I was meditating right before this interview. I just got out of meditation 5 minutes before the interview.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I find it does help, and I've practiced meditation for many years. You know, I would say going on 30 years now, and it does work. You know, and I don't spend a lot of time doing it. You know, I don't spend hours meditating, but I do.
No, you don't have to spend hours meditating.
Yeah.
You can just spend a few minutes, even 5 minutes will help you calm down, relieve the stress, and you just get back into center. It really works. Meditation is really powerful. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's the panacea of all ills.
So George Harrison, it seemed that India and the effects of TM on him had a greater influence. Is that a correct statement, or am I just reading into that?
Well, it influenced all the Beatles. However, Patty Boyd, who was George Harrison's wife, was the first one who got into transcendental meditation. She learned in February of 1967, and she told her husband about how it had changed her so dramatically and the incredible, really positive results she was getting. And so George said to her, well, I want my own mantra. So when they met Maharishi, George brought several of the Beatles and their wives and other friends to see Maharishi at the London Hilton, the Park Hilton, on August 24th of 1967. When they met Maharishi afterwards, George said to Maharishi, oh, I want my own mantra. So Maharishi said, well, why don't you come tomorrow? I'm teaching a meditation retreat in Bangor, North Wales at Normal College, and you can come with me on the train and we'll travel up there. And you'll come to a meditation retreat. So they intended to stay at that retreat for 10 days. They learned meditation the following day on August 25th. But unfortunately, on August 27th, they probably learned on the 26th because they arrived on the 25th. They drove up there on the 25th. They learned the next day on the 26th. Unfortunately, on the 27th, Brian Epstein, who was their manager, who had really created the Beatles. He created everything about the Beatles, their look, their sound, everything. He passed over on Sunday, the 27th. Yeah. So they had to go back to London, and they could not stay any longer at the meditation retreat. But Maharishi did invite them to come back to India for the February 1968 course. It started in January. The Beatles arrived in February of 1968 to Rishikesh, India, on the banks of the Ganges River, overlooking the Ganges from a high cliff. That's where the ashram was. And Ringo stayed there 10 days, Paul stayed 5 weeks, and John and George stayed 2 months.
Wow. Mm. And why did they leave in a huff? Was it what were the reasons that they left?
There were three reasons why the Beatles left India in a huff. One of those reasons had to do with a film deal gone south. Maharishi had promised the Beatles and the Apple Corps Company, led by executive Neil Aspinall, Maharishi had promised them an exclusive contract to film Maharishi and TM, make a film, a movie about Maharishi, about TM, about Maharishi's guru. But unfortunately, Maharishi made the same promise to someone else.
He had already promised
an exclusive contract to 4-Star Productions of Hollywood. And the lawyer arrived in Rishikesh with a signed contract that gave the exclusive rights to film Maharishi for the next 5 years.
Wow.
Oh, geez.
And then one morning at the ashram, John Lennon opened the door to his bungalow, and what was standing in front of him in the courtyard, a cameraman and a director who yelled, action. And that was the Four Star Productions film. That was not the Apple Corps film. And by the way, Neil Aspinall had already been told to bring a camera crew back to India to start on their filming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So John and George, needless to say, were furious. They refused to leave their rooms at the ashram. They would not go to the lecture hall where the lights and cameras were set up. And they just basically decided they weren't going to be two-bit players in someone else's film.
Wow.
So that's why they were very angry. And then they realized, oh, Maharishi has been using us for publicity all along, including an ABC special where Maharishi kept telling ABC that he would do a special with the Beatles, and he promised that the Beatles would come, and the Beatles had told him no and no and no over and over and over, but Maharishi kept promising ABC. And finally, Peter Brown and Paul McCartney and George Harrison flew to Sweden, where Maharishi happened to be at that time, and they said, knock this off. Stop telling ABC that we're going to do this special. We're not doing it.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
So that was one of the main reasons they left India.
And John Lennon, Yoko Ono were arrested in Spain in 1971. What was the background, or were you there during that time?
I was there during that time, and what happened was we were in Mallorca, and Maharishi was teaching a teacher training course at that time. And on April 23rd of 1971, John and Yoko suddenly appeared at the desk of the Samoa Hotel where we were staying to collect Yoko Ono's 7-year-old daughter at the time, Kyoko Cox. Her father, who was Yoko's ex, her father was Anthony Cox, and his wife, Melinda, they were meditating on the teacher training course. So they were also into TM.
Mm-hmm.
And Cox had custody of Kyoko, but there was a battle that was raging over visitation rights. And John and Yoko appeared. They were wearing dumb disguises, but everyone recognized them immediately anyway. And somehow they talked someone into telling them where Kyoko was, because they actually kidnapped the child from daycare at 1 p.m., and then Anthony Cox reported the abduction to the police. And by 5 p.m., John and Yoko were arrested in Palma. And by 8 p.m., Kyoko was returned to her father. And the Lennons, John and Yoko, received a conditional discharge, and they flew to Paris.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
What was the condition? Do you know?
That they leave.
Oh, okay.
Out of the country.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if it was that they leave or if they were told not to leave, and then they and then they broke it by leaving.
No, actually, if you get out of this country, if you fly to Paris and get out of here and return Kyoko, you'll be fine.
Okay.
So, huh. They made friends with the police, by the way.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure.
The policeman was very in awe of John and Yoko. So, you know, he was more than happy to have a cup of coffee with them and, you know.
That helps.
Send them on their way.
Now,
it does help to be John Lennon, yes.
Yeah.
Can you believe it's been 50 years since the White Album
time
was released?
Time flies, doesn't it? Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah,
for sure.
I have to say when it was first released, you know, I really didn't think it was a great album. You know, it's not until years later that I, you know, really appreciated the songs that are on the album. And
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It was compared to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It was really underproduced. It was very stripped down.
Exactly.
It was much more back to basics.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and maybe that's why, you know, that first of all it was a white cover, you know, so yeah.
You couldn't really read anything.
Yeah, there's no art.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And
there was a collage. That's it.
One of my favorite songs is Across the Universe, and you can hear the...
Oh, that's a beautiful song.
Oh,
yeah.
It is. It is. And, you know, you can hear the influence that in that song of their time in India, and you could hear the spirituality of the song. You know, it's a great song.
That particular song was written right after they learned meditation. They did not write that song in India. In fact, they released that song right before they went to India.
Really? Oh,
and
wow.
That song, yeah, that particular song, it had the words Jai Guru Deva in it.
Yep.
And Jai Guru Dev was something that Maharishi always used to say. He would say it dozens of times every day. He would say it instead of hello, instead of goodbye. It would be Jai Guru Dev, Jai Guru Dev, Jai Guru Dev. And what that word means, what that phrase means, is hail to the divine preceptor, or hail to the great teacher. And he was referring specifically to his teacher, Brahmananda Saraswati, who was his guru. And that's what that show, that particular song, is about. Meditation experiences, and it's about, it uses that word, Jai Guru Deva.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some hitting meanings in some of the other songs on the White Album. One of my other favorites is Revolution. What's the hidden meaning behind that song?
Now, Revolution, yes, it is an anti-war song, it's an anti-Vietnam song. However, it has a deeper meaning because Maharishi espoused a philosophy that was termed the Maharishi effect. And the Maharishi effect was that if a certain, even small percentage of the population would meditate, we could create world peace. Mm-hmm. Maharishi always used to say, if you want the forest to be green, every tree must be green. If you want the world to be at peace, every individual must be at peace. And he believed that that we could not create world peace through legislation, through treaties, through certainly not through wars, that the only way that we could create world peace was through enough people practicing meditation, which creates a positive vibration in the atmosphere, which changes people's heads, as John says in the song. It will, change your mind instead, is what he says in the song. So that is what will create world peace, not all these, not revolutions, not wars, not that sort of thing.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. How about the song Get Back?
Now, Get Back, that was written in India. However, it didn't come out until the Let It Be album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it did come out as a single later on, yes. And Get Back was about a gentleman that I knew. His name was Terry Gustafson. He came from Tucson, Arizona. He moved to California, and he started taking drugs, smoking grass and taking LSD. And he took LSD every week for 6 months, which, that was enough time for him to figure out it was not the answer. So then he learned meditation, and he flew to India, and he was on the same course as the Beatles. So late one night in front of the lecture hall, Terry Gustafson ran into John Lennon. And Terry was wearing his khakis and button-down shirt. He was looking very conservative. He had been a forest ranger, Sequoia National Park, actually, in California. And John was dressed like a wild hippie. He had on a paisley purple cape. He had on a red sash and white bell-bottom trousers. He had on green Egyptian shoes that curled up in the toes. He had on strobing eyeglasses that lights were flashing on and off on his eyeglasses. And his hair, according to Terry, was dyed 7 different colors. I mean, obviously, a bit of an exaggeration on Terry's part. However, you get the picture that John was dressed wild and crazy. All the Beatles were when they were in India.
Mm-hmm.
And so John said to Terry, hey, look at me, look at you. One of us don't belong here. Get back. you should get back to Tucson, Arizona. Get back to where you once belonged. Mm-hmm. And every time that John would run across Terry in the ashram, he would say, get back, get back.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the song was written.
Well, it was written by Paul, but
yeah.
Terry claims that was the birth of that song. Mm-hmm. That's how that came about.
Very, very interesting. What are some of your favorite songs?
I think my favorite song on the White Album is Blackbird.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so melodious and it's a really gorgeous song. And I like Paul's voice very much, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's done all right for himself, I think.
He's done okay, yeah.
He's done okay. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, my regret is I have not heard him in concert, but my wife says that we have to change that. We have to see him in concert.
Well, that's easy enough. He's doing another concert. He's going on tour again. He has a new album coming out. He just had one come out, and now he has a new one coming out.
Exactly.
In December.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can't. I'll be interested to see that. You know, to actually see and hear him in concert. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So, can you believe that? What do you think John Lennon and George Harrison would say about what's happening in the this country today? You know, have we learned anything since the 60s, or have at times it seems like we're in a worse position than we were in the 1960s?
No, I don't agree that we're in a worse position. We're in a much better position. Way back then, I mean, when I was born, which was in ancient times, it was a different world back then. There was no yoga. There was no mantra. There was no meditation. Yeah. There certainly were no yoga studios on every corner. There were no martial arts on every corner. There was no health food stores on every corner. There was no esoteric information anywhere. There were two esoteric bookstores in the entire country. And now you see that knowledge proliferating all over the internet. You just have to type in a word, and there it is. You've got all the information about any subject you want, anything you want to learn. Back then, you know, you didn't find any metaphysical books in bookstores. There was no metaphysical section of a bookstore, if you can believe it. It was a completely different world, and people were very uptight. They were very... You know, there was a reason why the counterculture started. It's because everybody was so damn uptight. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just so stressed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And everything had to be the rules. You know, you had to follow this one path. And it was very, I don't know, it was very suffocating. So that's why we became hippies. We wanted to be free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lived through that time, so I'm familiar with it. Brian's not.
No, I was a little luckier.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I agree with you. You know, I had some experiences during that time period where I was, you know, protesting the war in Vietnam, and then I found myself because I was between schools, and during that time, my number came up for the draft, which we don't have anymore. So I enlisted in the Army, and then I found myself in uniform. You know, so the very things I was protesting, I then became part of that. And so it was a very interesting time for me to be involved in all that.
How many people called you a hypocrite?
No, nobody called me a hypocrite, but I did get shouted at, and people spit at me, and you know, all that stuff. So
yeah,
it was an interesting time.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was a very interesting time, and I agree with you that I think we are in a better time. Certainly, people are more enlightened today and can find out more outlets for their frustration, and they're not as uptight as you said. You know, I remember.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Just stay away from Twitter.
Yeah. Stay away from Twitter. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you've written 14 books on the subject of spirituality, most of them. And what for someone who is seeking enlightenment, what's the quickest path, or what can you tell people?
If you truly are seeking enlightenment, then you really need to put all effort into making that the biggest priority in your life. In other words, learn some spiritual practices and practice them. Take discipline. Be disciplined in practicing the spiritual practices that you learn. And you'll find that you will make progress, and you'll make progress very, very quickly. Anything you place your attention on in your life will grow in your life. Any intention that you have in your life will grow in your life. Mm-hmm. So if you have that sincere desire and intention to become spiritually enlightened, or to gain spiritual knowledge or wisdom, or to learn how to meditate, do it. Take advantage of every opportunity you have and go for it, and make it really a top priority in your life. Otherwise, you're wasting your life. If that's your desire, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Judaism has a concept, and that is, it's what you do that makes a difference in the world. So you're supposed to go out and, be kind to people and try to make the world a better place, try to spread light into the world. I see that, as be the change that you want to see type of thing.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And yes, you're creating not only your own destiny, but the destiny of the entire planet through every thought, every word, and every deed that you do. You're creating your destiny through your thoughts primarily, but also through your speech and through your actions. So it's very important that everything that comes out of your mouth be something that you want to own, that you want to see manifest in your life. So walking around saying things like, oh, I'm so sad, oh, I'm so poor, I'm so unhappy, I'm so sick, these types of affirmations, they will manifest, not only for you, but for everything and everyone around you. So it's best if you are very careful about what you say. If you say things like, I am joyous, I am happy, I am fulfilled, I am prosperous, I am getting better and better, my health is improving day by day. If you're saying positive statements and if you're doing positive actions, then you're creating a very positive outcome, not only for yourself, but for everyone around you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. And I wish I had more time today to speak with you, but you'll have to come back and we'll talk again.
I would love to.
Where can people reach you at if they want to learn more about what you do and about your books?
Right. So www.drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. Or another site if you're interested in spiritual tours, travels, and conferences at sea, cruise ship conferences, Divine Travels. .com. That's DIVINETRAVELS. That's plural on the travel, Divine Travels at AOL. I'm sorry, .com. Just DivineTravels.com.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Susan Chomsky. And come back soon.
I'd love to come back soon. And thanks for inviting me. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank
you.
Our
pleasure.
Have a great weekend, and we're going to be back right after these words.